Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, and today I'll be breaking down 90 Day Fiancé and Teen Mom 2. I always love Sunday nights because there's always great TV, whether it's Sister Wives or, of course, 90 Day Fiancé, and thank God it is 2 hours long. My only wish is that TLC would cut those Russ and Paula segments out and give us more of everyone else. Now, more on that in a moment, but first, your reminders to check out my bonus content and secret Facebook group by becoming a member on Patreon. That's patreon.com/realitytvpod. There's different levels and different perks, starting at just $1 a month. That really helps me be able to deliver you the podcast that you're listening to right now, as well as everything else you get on Patreon. Now, if you just want to talk with other people that are obsessed with 90 Day Fiancé, Real Housewives, Little Women, Teen Mom, you know, all the other shows that you love, head on over to my Facebook group. Just search Reality TV Pod on Facebook, or if you type in facebook.com/groups/realitytvpod, it'll lead you right there. For screenshots and to talk to me between shows with some live tweeting, find me at Reality TV Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And if you're not already listening to Moms on the Rocks, you are really missing out because my co-host Carrie and I are talking a lot of shit on 90 Day Fiancé and life in general. And it turns out we really don't talk a ton about mom stuff. So head on over, subscribe, listen. It's Moms on the Rocks, new episode coming out tomorrow. So make sure you tune in. Okay, enough of all that. Let's get into some 90 Day Fiancé, starting out with Molly and Luis. Picking up where Luis the asshole left off last week, blaring his shitty-ass music as loud as he can so he can puff his chest from the cowardly confines of Molly's guest bedroom. Yeah, Luis, you are just such a cool guy. Show us again what a grown manly man you are in your Space Jam t-shirt and hiding in your bedroom. Now, the scene really is kind of difficult to snark on because Luis is just being controlling and in some respects abusive, and there's got to be something about him calling the cops because Molly is really insistent that he not call them despite Luis himself really being the one who deserves to have the cops called on him. So I'm wondering if this has something to do with Molly's previous DUIs. This is just a question. I have no idea. I'm just wondering, maybe she's on some kind of probation or, I don't know, maybe she can't have certain things happen within a certain amount of time after those DUIs. Maybe it's just because she doesn't want the cops coming to her house with her kids there. Either way, I guess it really doesn't matter because, in my opinion, Molly is right, like 1,000% right. You don't like it here, Luis? Well, then get out. No one's forcing you to be part of this family, or at least anymore. Just get your shit and leave. And I hated that Molly had to be the one to pack up her own clothes with Kensley and leave her own house, which leaves Luis to do God only knows what in her house that she's paying the bills on. Now, Uncle Jesse must have head over to check out what was going on because, of course, he did. He's Jesse. Pure as molasses on a summer morn. Not really quite sure what that means, but it just sounds right and it sounds like something Jesse would like to do. But anyway, Molly returns to her house, sees Luis left the guest room looking like one of those houses I've been seeing on my new favorite show, which is sadly over. Nightmare Renters, Slum Landlords on Netflix, check it out. But Molly's pissed. She's also looking really good in this scene, minus the fabric hanging earring thing, but she already knows that. I love a bold lip on her. Not always a big fan on everyone, but she looked good. So she calls Luis, but he ends up hanging up on her. At this point, she knows she needs to divorce him. This requires a trip down to see Gregory J. Conkey, attorney at law and Just for Men enthusiast. Molly probably needed to see a therapist first, though, because she really unpacked a lot of baggage in there. However, I'm glad she did, because I was able to zoom in and get a lovely screenshot of what Gregory J. Conkey, attorney at law, wrote down. Mostly it was facts about her ages, Luis's age, the girls' ages, and a timeline. But I also was able to make out the words rehabilitative alimony, which I'm guessing was discussed as a way to hurry the divorce along and make it worth Luis's while to settle quickly. Let's hope that was the case, because I don't think we know too much as of late. I don't think we've seen where they are in the process according to her social media. Inform me, let me know if I missed something. Okay, take a deep breath. Let's move on to Nicole. Nicole and May are on that plane to Morocco. May's really cute. She sees a cloud outside the window, but Nicole doesn't give a crap because it's not Morocco and it's not her Starbucks paycheck being Western Unioned away to fund Azin's sweater fetish. She also doesn't seem to know what a meltdown is, because although Nicole claims she's just frustrated and tired because May supposedly had a meltdown, May seemed quite chipper and chilled out to me. I don't think it takes a genius to see that Nicole is likely the one having the meltdown because May doesn't want to talk about Moroccan clouds anymore or pretend to give a shit about Daddy Azin, who lives in her phone. Also, grow the hell up, Nicole. You're tired. We all are. You don't get to sleep until May is about 24 years old. Every parent knows that. You think Azin's family's just dying to play with May all hours of the night so you can sleep? No, you selfish, self-absorbed brat. But here we are again. We've landed. We're in the airport in Morocco where Azin is waiting. Interesting to see him with fresh new kicks and another leather jacket. Must have been tough to save up for those with no job. You know, here we have May having to give up all her toys and mommy sending shopping spree money to her pretend fiance. It's not funny. It's actually infuriating to me. And you know what else is not just infuriating, but absolutely wrong and irresponsible and so many other things that I'd love to say, but I'm sure Robbily and Stepdad Wapner have already said it to Nicole. That moment when Nicole asks May to kiss Azin. Are you that freaking dumb? He's not daddy. He's not even anything close to being your husband. May doesn't even know this guy at all, besides being a face in your phone, and you're telling her to show affection in the form of a kiss on the lips to a man? All that comes to mind in my mouth is to just say, how dare you do that? That to me is just indefensible. And not only that, May has to be then stuck in the car with these two for what appear to be hours. At one point, Nicole is serving as a human body pillow for Azin. Perhaps Azin's awful karma was starting at that point, just having to hear Nicole's snoring mixed with, you know, she had a grumbly tummy because she wasn't happy with the in-flight meal selection. Now, once at the hotel where May is laying all over the countertop, yeah, I saw that, they're given two rooms because they can't stay in the same room together. Let's all breathe a sigh of relief for May's sake. However, we all know Azin was breathing a sigh of relief as well. You know what pissed me off especially was something Azin said, which at face value might have slipped under the radar, but I heard it. Azin asks Nicole if she likes the room because he hopes she likes it. Yeah, you better hope she likes it because she's the one paying for both your damn rooms. Azin likely upgraded his own room because Nicole wouldn't even bat an eye if her tip money at Starbucks was going towards Azin's minibar tab or not. Fast forward to the next morning, Azin and May are walking hand in hand while Nicole, her mother, is on the complete other side of the street. Strange. Azin, of course, could not be any more distant or uninterested. He's even covered his body with the thickest layer of wool or alpaca I have ever seen. He's not even trying to hide his disinterest in his ultimate plan to use Nicole at this point. He's even laughing about the voice recordings with his interview with producers. He can't even say, "I know it's not funny," without giggling uncontrollably. We don't need Dr. Phil's former FBI lie detector guy to tell us that Azin is lying and hiding some dark secrets. Let's talk about that scene in the restaurant more, though. Don't want to jump ahead just yet. Something struck me watching those two, and it was more so when Nicole was in the street alone. Because for the first time ever, Nicole actually seemed with it. Like, she wasn't the carefree, ditzy girl that we're used to seeing. She seemed pretty sincere and level-headed, to be honest. I wanted to just press pause, keep her in that moment, but alas, she's currently claiming she's still in love with Azin online as of today. So I don't think her clear-headedness lasted very long. Now, Russ and Paula. Hey, I really don't care because these two are horrible actors, and that seems to be the general consensus, everything I'm seeing online. The most interesting thing in their scene to me was the weird porridge that they were eating in their hotel room. And it didn't seem to help fill their bellies very well and feed their brains because immediately Russ starts flubbing his lines right off the bat. First, it was when he paused for a really long period of time and then he just calls Paula a mean girl. Okay, Russ, wrong genre. Tina Fey, you are not. So let's just fast forward to the dinner with Paula's friend Gio. I think we just assume he's legitimate because he's wearing a scarf. Otherwise, he basically just wants to take nude photos of Paula like every other gig she's ever gotten. Same shit we see every season, every episode. Now, if I could tell you how pissed I was to see Juan show up at that photo shoot, Jesus Cristo, put an El Forco in Colombia because this telenovela is done. And then Russ walks in, he's crossing his arms and he glares at Juan. It was so stupid. But most of all, having your parents there to watch you take topless photos, you thirsty, thirsty mujer. Why even invite your parents if you're going to then say, "I feel so weird having my parents here for the photo shoot"? Oh, do you, Paula? Because I am 100% certain your father is about to take his last dying breath trying to avoid looking straight at your nipple. But then it got kind of weird because I think he kind of enjoyed it. But let me tell you about Mr. Photo Artist Gio with the scarf. I dug into it, and his Facebook is filled with photo shoots like Paula's was, with naked or nearly naked women. And nothing about Paula's photo shoot screamed this artistic, traditional Colombia. No, in fact, the word Colombia that was written around her neck looked like my 8-year-old's bubble letters. Bush League, absolutely pun intended. Let's go on to George and Anfisa. We pick up with Anfisa along with her standard C cups organically grown onto the pathological liar George's chest. But it's not just George's unapologetic mumbling and pubic beard that got me going. It is his nonchalant, "I think we just need to move on from this," comments to Anfisa that really put me over the edge. Yeah, real easy for you to say that because you're the big fat liar, George. It's easy for you to want to just move on and forget about it because it requires nothing from you and it requires everything from Anfisa. I think George may say he's sorry, but he also said it himself, that he chooses to lie in the moment. And those moments happen quite a lot. George just sucks. I didn't think I'd ever be more on Anfisa's side on this, but I definitely am. Even in George's apologies for lying, he doesn't take ownership in it. He says that he only lies because he doesn't want to hear Anfisa yelling at him. Like, come on, man. Lying, whether you're doing it to defend yourself or avoid something, for any reason, lying is always going to make you look like less of a person. Always, always. Now, cut to Anfisa seeing this therapist to talk about her issues with George's lying. And man, a lot of you were talking about this in the Facebook group. Anfisa really is getting a humanized edit this season. We find out her dad died when she was 9 and she didn't have a great relationship with her mom. But the roughest part to watch for me was when the therapist asks her what George's good qualities are, and she could not come up with anything. Yikes. We also see that, yes, in fact, George was blackmailing Anfisa with what she may or may not have done with the whole webcamming thing. Whether she did it or not, which I think we think that she is. And again, if she does that webcamming shit, who cares? Doesn't matter to me unless whatever, she's breaking the law. But blackmailing her is total bullshit. Who would ever want to be married, intimate, or in love with someone who blackmails you? To steal a line from Azin, it's just not possible. Now, you know TLC is in for the action when you hear the music change for Chantel and Pedro, and it's a song that goes like this. Uh-oh, uh-oh, da-da-da-da-da-da, uh-oh, uh-oh. Yeah, and perfect timing because Sister Pedro is about to arrive. Chantel explains with her, I finally figured it out. She keeps a very stiff lower jaw, and she talks extra slow, and she says that she's really stressed out about this. I can't do it very well, but physically I can do it well. So you know what Chantel's going to do? She's going to get dressed up in her tightest cocktail dress and cheapest Forever 21 blazer, and she's going to attend a family meeting at a private investigator's office. What the hell is going on here? And why are Thirsty and River there? Why does this family have to do everything together? I mean, I know, we all know it's because they're all attention whores and they think that this show is their big break. But Robin Martinelli, owner of Martinelli Investigations, was ready for her big break too, because holy shit, the hair on that woman. Not only did the contrast of blonde to red take my breath away, but the poof and the striking red streaks matched the paint on the wall. Yeah, safe to say Family Chantel found the perfect match for them. Now, this woman is horrible. She is purposely asking questions to rile these idiots up so that she can close the deal and start getting paid to surveil Pedro. It was like watching someone bringing in a used car to a car dealership, and they're asking, oh, should I just give you my car for no trade-in value, and I'll buy a new car for the sticker price? I mean, just absolute idiots. So Robin just keeps laying into Chantel. Does he have a lock on his phone? Why? Well, don't we all have locks on our phones? I mean, I have like that little passcode thing on my phone too, but it's not to hide anything. It's just so no one can access all my shit if I happen to lose my phone. But according to River, that's insane, Chantel. Okay, River, your face and hair is insane, and it actually offends me, to be honest. Your face offends our collective sense of common sense and basic human decency. So you get the hell out of here with your locked phone, because you know he freaking has one. And shame on Lightning McQueen for stirring up shit just to seal the deal with his family, because Chantel is on the verge of tears. I mean, she should have known better than to even go to this lady with her family, but come on. The lady's asking, do you really know if Pedro is really Pedro? No, he just drew a picture of himself with a crayon to prove his identity, and the U.S. government just handed him a green card. Now things, if they weren't already going bad, just started going off the rails. And Lightning McQueen started being a real bitch when Chantel said that she didn't want to launch the investigation after all. Well, then they could hire me if you don't. How do you know if Pedro's really going to work? Okay, so now you're saying that Pedro doesn't even actually have a job and he's just dicking around all day. Somehow, getting the money that you're upset he's not spending on Chantel to send back to the Dominican Republic. It doesn't even make sense. This lady is so desperate for a sale. Now let's take a break from her for a little bit because special delivery. Chantel and Pedro's new couch has arrived. There is some worry that it's not going to fit, but I was worried because Sister Pedro is going to be sleeping on their brand new couch for 2 weeks. Now, I love my family, but no way in hell are they going to be sleeping on my new couch for 2 weeks. Sorry, not sorry. I don't want your dead skin cells clogging up the pores of my new couch. And Chantel's is microfiber, and that stuff is just like a magnet for everything. Now let's jump to the airport where Pedro is waiting for his sister to arrive. Brother and sister are so happy to see each other. I thought it was kind of sweet. Chantel even used a Dominican slang word to say hi, sister-in-law, which I think the sister truly appreciated. But Sister Pedro is cautious because Chantel did indeed lose her mind back in the Dominican. You know I have to point out the obvious, and that is that Pedro has been paying for his sister's orthodontia on the sly because sister has a shiny new grill reflecting off those streetlights. And the reason we see her in the streetlights is because shit went down as soon as the pink sleeping bag made its way into her arms. Now, turns out, Pedro never really bothered to inform her that she would be sleeping on the couch. This totally confuses me. I don't know where Sister Pedro thought she would be sleeping, though. Like, normally that's a question one asks before they visit someone for 2 weeks, but too late now. It is no surprise to me whatsoever now that Pedro chose to marry Chantel. He is simply used to living with the most spoiled, princessy, rude, conceited kind of women, so of course Chantel caught his attention. Now his sister, I've been saying that she was appreciative and all that, but wow, she is a rude bitch. But I think Chantel is just as bad. Think about it. Chantel wanted Pedro to say something to his sister and stick up for her, which I think he should have. I do not disagree. However, when Chantel's entire family was being bigoted and complete jerks to Pedro, Chantel never spoke up for him. She's just getting a taste of her own medicine, and she doesn't see the double standard in it all. I'd love to know what Mother's Pedro reaction to the couch bed was. We saw just a snippet, just the beginning of Sister Pedro showing the mom where she was going to be sleeping. I really think that was important. I wish they wouldn't have edited that out because I think it would have shed a lot of light on what Pedro's family is really like. Now, on to David and Annie. Not too much with these two this week. Maybe it's because David was busy working. Just kidding. Well, Annie has been struggling with living in the States because, of course, David doesn't have a job, and aren't we all struggling living with David in the States? So Annie has found this Thai temple to go to. This woman found her on social media, and they've become friends. I actually think it's really a great thing for Annie. Despite what I think about her, I am not her biggest fan by any means, but I think it's important for immigrants to any country to find their community and have a support system in their new countries. And this took, I like her. She is our voice of reason. She's telling Annie that David needs to find a job. Maybe not necessarily flipping burgers. I wouldn't be opposed to that, but he doesn't have to be so damn picky either. Just do something. At least try to show that you're trying. She also advises Annie to kind of press in, lean into David some more on finding a job and starting a family. But I don't think David will ever do something he doesn't want to do. So thumbs up. Good luck with that, Annie. Now, something I want to do is talk about Teen Mom 2 right after a quick break. Very interesting week on Teen Mom 2 this week. We're going to start off with Brianna, and she's telling us how she's been wanting to get a few things done cosmetically to her body since her pregnancy with Stella. cut to the jankiest, most unprofessional sign for Dr. Miami. This thing looks like something you would order on Amazon Prime for a kid's birthday party, except it arrives and there's like lead paint chipping off the thing because it's just some cheap China sweatshop plaque. But no, that's not even the worst of it. Because then we see Dr. Miami himself, and this guy can barely close his eyes. He's cut so much of his eyelids out. He tells Brianna he's going to see how much damage the baby has done. I'm not going to lie, I was totally pearl-clutching. Like, excuse me, first of all, fuck off. Second, the damage was done when you slid those folded pieces of cardboard into her ass last time, and they're slowly opening back up into the Amazon Prime box that your office sign came in. Now, I haven't even mentioned this asshole's desk. Go to my Twitter and Instagram, and you'll see a screenshot of it. There is a glass vase with kind of like a gold chain around it with a placard saying, Dr. Miami, aka Trap King. He also has another plaque that says, I'm kind of a big deal, and a mug with either a Russian Federation flag or a Fraternal Order of Douchebag flag sticking out of it that says, I'm a surgeon, what is your superpower? Well, I'll answer that seeing through your bullshit, first of all. Now, to my shock, Brianna's just getting a tummy tuck. What? Am I the only one that thinks the asses this guy gave to Kale and Brianna should be outlawed? I sincerely feel bad for them because this guy destroyed their bodies far more than a baby could. Now, then we have Roxanne, who put me in a much better mood. Then she upped my anxiety because she's telling Brianna about Javi wanting to marry her. Oh my God, dear God. You can tell these two, Javi and Brianna, they're not at the point where they should be getting married. We don't see them without cameras around, but even when the cameras are around, you can tell if a couple has a real connection. Just think of your friends and whatever, your coworkers. You can just tell. And these two, well, obviously you know that they don't because they broke up, but you can even tell at the time they don't click like a couple should. I think it was smart of Roxanne to give Brianna a heads up, even though Brianna was kind of pissed, because Roxanne is right. They have a lot of things stacked against them. And this isn't just like planning a little vacation or whatever. It is marriage and they have kids that they have to worry about and moving states and custody and all of that kind of stuff. Now, with all these worries swirling around, thank God we have Brittany. Clearly in some kind of pain mixed with tiredness, she's chilling out on the floor as Brianna gets this call from Javi. The expression on Brittany's face, she looked like how Mondays feel. Brittany needs her own show. I would love to see her just walking around, fulfilling my fantasies, high-fiving people in the face, and then she comes over to my house and she's just like my best friend and we laugh and laugh and laugh at all the things that other teen moms do. You know, me just like one of the girls. But back to Brianna. She is going to have Javi come to take care of her after the tummy tuck because turns out Javi doesn't need to deploy. Yay on not having to leave the country, and yay on taking care of your girlfriend after a tummy tuck. I mean, I guess there's no rule book on that. It just seems a little bizarre. Now, quick shout out to Shirley because we get to see her talking to Brianna about possibly them getting married. Ugh, don't like the situation, but I will forever be pro Shirley. But MTV, you gotta quit playing games with my heart. Don't give me this MTV had access issues bullshit so you couldn't film in Delaware. You didn't think to call Brittany and I to tag team this shit and cover it? We're available. Now, we really don't know what the hell happened exactly because Brianna says Javi kind of sort of proposed, but she didn't like the proposal pretty much because he just handed her the box. So she gave it back to him. But then she says she thinks they need to wait anyway, but she may or may not have taken the ring if he was deploying. No comprendo makes no sense to me. Now, Roxanne was just as confused when they meet at this dinner later, which seemed to be at the Orlando airport or Orlando's noisiest cafeteria. Not a place I would be bringing a baby. Now, she doesn't know either why Javi was rushing everything. But then, we get a snap to focus. Roxanne doesn't want this all to go down because shit just got real. She doesn't want Brianna to leave with the girls to live in Delaware. She thinks Javi must think pretty highly of himself to betray her, meaning Roxanne, and take her daughter and granddaughters away from her. She makes a comment about, you know, I'm kind of a prude with this kind of stuff, his dingle dangle, but it would be crude to repeat. And you know me, I'm just a classy lady, right? I mean, I would never speak like that. Now, Roxanne does take it over the top, and I have to agree with Brianna and Brittany. She really is kind of a drama queen, and she gets up, swings her shawl around her shoulders, and storms out of the cafeteria. Brittany definitely gets it from her mama, and for that, I thank you, Roxanne. Now, Chelsea. Guess what? Chelsea's pregnant, Watson turns one, humans like cupcakes, and sometimes people run late. That's all I got for Chelsea. Four things, time to say bye-bye. Okay, so let's move on to Janelle. We're waiting to hear about our house getting fixed, and David's still angry about the whole ordeal. Well, Janelle, what is David not angry about? And with no time to spare, shit immediately gets real. A sheriff is at Janelle's front door knocking away. Now, Janelle is just hiding in her room behind a door that's clearly had a fist go through it at some point. She's not freaking out, but the producer and the camera crew sure is. But not Janelle. She just saunters out like this is just a sales guy walking around the neighborhood trying to pitch you some lawn service. Not a care in the world as she's leaning against her sinking kitchen island in no less than 19 prescription bottles behind her. And I'm not exaggerating. I counted 19 prescription bottles. Then David comes out in a rage, opens the door, refuses to go outside. And as the sheriff, who I know that they did some sort of voice modulation thing, but you could definitely tell this cop had more chew in his mouth than he knew what to do with. And he tells David that he's just there for a well child check. So with that, David slams the door in the cop's face and says to go check on them at daycare then. What the fuck? If you were not abusing your kids and a cop came to your door inquiring about them, I would be like, what? What the hell? Like, please come in, check it out by all means. Now, not only that, but can we also discuss why these two lazy assholes are home all day, but they're sending their kids to daycare? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's better that the kids are at daycare than with Janelle and David, but what the fuck, you lazy pieces of shit. So Janelle finally goes to the door, yells at the cop. He could have been there an hour. He could have been there 5 minutes. It doesn't matter. He's there too long. You don't slam a door in a cop's face. Now she tells them that they've already been investigated by CPS 20 times. We're all good. Been there, done that. Go back to the station and tell your little friends that. Well, David gets all pissed because he thinks Janelle said too much. And the producer is acting like, oh my gosh, like, wow, Janelle, this is just crazy. She's pretending to be flabbergasted and be on Janelle's side, which I'm starting to doubt, or rather, I'm not starting, I just doubt it. I think she's playing along to get Janelle to trust her and open up. But David at this point is going stir crazy. He is livid. He's pacing around the house saying he's going to violate Nathan's face with his fist. I mean, he's not the first nor the last person to get that urge. We've all been there. But David actually had the opportunity to follow through, which makes it a legitimate threat. Janelle says it might just be the haters, though. It might not be Nathan. You know, as if the haters are an actual organized 501c3 group that are going after them. But in all honesty, to get serious here for just a second, I do think Janelle is afraid of David. She is a monster just like him, but you can see the fear in her eyes, and she knows what he's like on a whole other level that we don't even want to know. Jump to Janelle having a little conversation with her one friend, and literally I mean her one friend. The friend is clearly trying to segue into the wellness check on the kids, but Janelle, all she can talk about, all she cares about is her damn house. And now It's not sinking, it's cracking. Yeah, her house is cracking in two, and it couldn't happen to a more deserving person. You also gotta love the revisionist history of Janelle saying she was just sweet as a daisy opening that door for the cop and saying, "Hi, everything's fine." Yeah. And then she says, "Yeah, a wellness check? I mean, what do they even mean? The kids are at school. You think we just keep them home from school? Duh." Janelle, you dumb fuck. It's not like a health checkup. The cops are coming to see if they're healthy, to see if you kept your kids home when they were sick, you idiot. I really, truly think that's what went through Janelle's mind. But no, let's get back to the haters. It's just the haters and Nathan judging Janelle's parenting. You see, David's not used to it, but Janelle is. Again, what the fuck are you talking about, Janelle? You didn't even do any parenting for 7 years until Kaiser was born, like, what, two and a half years ago? Just keep pulling that ponytail a little tighter, dollar store Ariana Grande action figure. Now brace yourselves. This is where the screen goes black. A few days after Janelle's previous scene was filmed, David got into a heated battle online. Now I take issue with this. Battle? No, what is this? Bears beats Battlestar Galactica? No. Let's call it what it is, and it is not a battle. David simply proved himself to be the misogynist, bigoted, homophobic, stupid, narrow-minded, ignorant piece of shit that he is. A battle would imply David fought a fight that could be won or lost. David doesn't have any brain capacity to battle anyone. Now, as we all know, because of these things that David just happened to put in writing, although we've known that he's always been this person, MTV had cause to fire him. And because Janelle is an idiot and in a codependent relationship, she now refuses to film. Good luck paying those bills for your cracking house and court fees with your zero salary plus benefits, babe. Lots of Office references for you today. I couldn't help it. I'm trying not to get too dark here, but, you know, it's tough because, like most, if not all of you, David and Janelle's everything is just so offensive and so wrong and complete opposite of what I hope to be the future of this country. So let's just talk about Babs. I mean, she's always a bright light, no matter what you feel about her. So she makes her appearance and she recounts the details, which I kind of sort of forgot about in the flurry of comments and firings over the past couple of months. But this whole thing started because Janelle and David were posting pictures of Janelle with this huge gun or automatic weapon on the day of the school shooting in Florida, which is just one of the many shootings we have almost every goddamn day here in this country. What the fuck is wrong with America? Sorry, not sorry, but David then went on his rant against everyone. Now, Babs thinks that something is wrong at the house. She doesn't know what it is, but it's clear she thinks it's all David. And that is where I think all of us disagree with Barbara. Janelle's not an innocent victim in all this. She's a bad person too. Okay, moving on to another bad person, let's talk about Kale. We're reminded that Joe filed for 50-50 custody a couple months back, so they have to go to this mediation. But first, another fucking photo shoot. How many photo shoots does Kale need? I swear to God she's had a photo shoot every other episode. But the photo shoot was nothing compared to the depths my eyes rolled back into my head when Kale goes on to tell her friend that she's so proud of herself for getting out of two toxic relationships back to back. Okay, Kale, most people would be like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I'm getting into toxic relationships back to back. I need to get my shit together. But no, she sees it as like a graduation of sorts, which, you know, would probably call for another photo shoot. Jump to the court date or mediation, whatever that was. And, you know, I don't see why Kale even has an issue at all with Joe wanting 50-50. Look, he's a good dad. He moved states and moved into your neighborhood to be closer to his son. He's part of his son's life, your other son's life. He's good to your other kids. Like, what is the problem? In my eyes, it's just Kale wanting to be in control of everything and everyone else's life, even if they're really not in her life anymore as a romantic partner. Now, Joe giving Kale a hug and saying, let's just work this out, and being understanding that she was 6 months pregnant when he brought up custody. Whoa. I mean, I don't know how many former baby daddies would be that kind. Kale will never realize how lucky she is. I mean, I didn't even realize how lucky she was until the past, what, two seasons. Joe clearly has changed a lot. I guess what I'm saying is, yes, I hate Kale, but I hate that she uses her being pregnant as an excuse all the time, especially with the fathers of her children. She uses it as an excuse for being bitchy to everyone. Like, you can't just expect everyone to put their lives on hold because of your bad moods and because of your pregnancies. We're talking about custody arrangements and father-son relationships, family relationships, real lives. It's not like a coffee order or where to go for dinner. Kale's just such an unapologetic asshole. And frickin' Bone, god damn it, she's sitting there in a wrestling t-shirt or some shit. I think there was some sort of John Cena-ish character on it. She looks like a Napoleon Dynamite side character, right? She's in the wrong scene, wrong movie, wrong show. Just get her out of here. All right, Leah. Can I tell you how hilarious it was that MTV chose this acoustic banjo music to introduce Leah? Never stop, MTV. From the depths of my soul and my being, thank you. But my happy mood didn't last long because, you guys, when I saw Leah there with those puppies, I thought one of you were going to have to break it to me that she's now breeding dogs, to which I would have told you I need a much stronger anxiety prescription because this isn't going to be good. I don't trust 3/4 of the people in that house with animals nor humans. I'll let you figure out the math problem. But thank God she's adopting these puppies out because she picked up some stray dog she rescued when it was pregnant. I still have concerns. Not so much about the dogs, but about Leah and her sister. Let's talk about this. Victoria and Leah. They were clearly stressed together. In other words, they were both in need of stress camp in previous seasons. So them hanging out together now while their girlses are wandering around always sends up a red flag for me. These two are not only stressed, but they're terrible actresses because they're talking about Leah and Jeremy needing to go on a date together. They're already sleeping together, and these two are fretting about Leah not having time to go out on a proper date. And that's just too much to worry about and taking things too fast. And this is why they were both teen moms. Mother Dawn, are you seeing this? West Virginia school districts, are you watching this? Did someone mix up a lesson plan one day? Like, you taught Wednesday's lesson on getting pregnant and having sex before Tuesday's lesson on dating and relationship? God damn it, America, get it together. Now cut to the dogs crawling all over Addie as she's screaming, "Fire ants crawling all over me!" Which naturally begs the question, how big are the ants crawling around Leah's house exactly? Add Leah's home to the places in which floor is lava. It was nice to see Leah practice her lines for the More You Know commercial she was giving on spaying and neutering your pets. Wish she would have practiced that much when she gave her standing in your power lip sense, y'all, speakings. Now, later that day, Leah meets with the generic Corey and Leah circa 2011 to drop off one of the dogs. And Addie is pretending to be sad. Didn't see any tears. Didn't even see a full-out frown. Yeah, I gotta say it. Addie is on my radar. She has a lot of Leah and Grace in her, which is kind of a wicked combo. Eagle eyes on Addie. Well, that's where we're going to wrap up another week in reality TV. I hope you enjoyed my recaps. And if you did, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Help spread the word and keep this little podcast that could chugging along. Remember to find my other podcast, Moms on the Rocks, if you're looking for a few more laughs. and join me on Patreon, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at RealityVPod everywhere. And don't forget, there's some really cute new merch and mugs. If you go to realityvpodcast.com, click the little shop link there and you'll see all of your options. So until next time, or later this week if you're on Patreon for the bonus episode, enjoy your sunny summer days and stay salty.